We're going to go down the line with some general questions. Books make a lot more money than short stories. Melanie, why did you decide to write short stories first before novels?
Actually, I didn't. I wrote two novels before I began to write short stories. And I really wrote a short story because my third novel got dropped by me. And I was devastated. And I had written a short story. I had it, you know, lying around a different in my jam book. But I couldn't get Elder Queen. And Janet, at Elder Queen, got the short story, loved it, published it right away, and I've been publishing it with her ever since. And so, you know, it was a matter of survival, writing, you know, staying in the business of writing short stories. And out of that matter of survival, I found out that I was very, very good at it.
Same question.
Same question?
I actually tried to write novels at the beginning and short stories at the beginning, and here's a clue for all you all. Short stories are shorter than novels, and generally they don't take as long to write, and I am an incredibly slow writer because I'm, as Gore Vidal said, I don't write, I rewrite. I don't have anything to say, but I have a lot to add. So you can write a lot of short stories in the time it takes to write a novel, especially if you're working a day job and you have not a short attention span, but a short amount of time to dedicate to it. It's easier to do a short story an hour a day than a novel an hour a day, I think. So I had more success writing short stories than novels, too. I obviously have had one novel published, but I'm still sliding away on the second one. But in that time, between the two novels, I've had probably 10 short stories published. So.
Rena, same question.
I think that the short story is an art form that has been neglected for the last 30, 40 years. Some of the classics of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, names like H.C. Bailey, R. Austin Freeman, people today don't know those names. Has anyone read anything that... Okay, I see three hands. Okay, except for up here. Good. The stuff is great. It's amazingly written. I would take a slightly different approach than what Rob said. Yes, short stories are shorter, but I would say that the brevity that it requires to write a short story takes a lot more nuance and subtlety and focus than what it takes to write a novel. Not to take anything away from novels, but it's a different animal.
Okay. Jane?
To me, the short story is the natural form for telling crime fiction. There are 56 Sherlock Holmes short stories and 4 Sherlock Holmes novels. Raymond Chandler wrote seven novels, but he wrote dozens of short stories. Likewise, Hammett wrote 5 novels, and he wrote over 30 short stories. So to me, the short story is just the natural form. I grew up mostly reading anthologies and collections of short stories, and although I did read novels as well, the short story was always my great love. When I first started to do the Trevisco, that is the 18th century detective, I originally intended to write a novel. But then it suddenly occurred to me that I'm not a novelist. So and when I realized that I could use the same character in short stories, in a series of short stories, the stories suggested themselves immediately, which was not the case with the novel, where I was struggling with what the plot was going to be. The problem I think that a lot of people have with short stories is simply that reading habits have changed so dramatically over the last 50 years that the circumstances that people generally read short stories in have disappeared or have been replaced by other means of entertainment. I think there is something, though, that may be leading to a change, and that is the growing popularity of e-readers. One of the things that people do with e-readers is that they use the e-reader for their interstitial moments of time. That is, you don't dedicate 3 hours to reading your Kindle. You take it along with you in the train and you read for 5 minutes. For that sort of thing, short stories were perfect. I just wish that they would go back and start buying the print stuff too, because really, I think I like to say that a writer without an editor is like a criminal without a defense attorney. You're probably going to go down. One of the most important things about having print short stories is that you have editors who are able to give you a broad spectrum of what is good in short fiction. And you can get all of this in a much shorter time than having to buy half a dozen or a dozen novels. I really wish that people would buy more print. And Janet and Linda, the editors of Hitchcock and Ellery Queen, are here in the audience. I just want to tell you thank you, first of all. And secondly, guys, if you don't subscribe to those magazines, you should. Even if you don't read them all the time.
Short stories rather than novels?
Well, I started out writing a novel, and then I got additional ideas. Another story came to me, and it became clear to me that this was not a novel idea. This was a short idea, short story idea. And then it gave me an opportunity not to actually write something that gets published. And I found short stories generally easier to get published than a novel. At least you know right away, and at least it necessarily your entire life waiting around. And the e-magazines helped, and there was the anthologies. So it gave me that something that kept me going, but it did something else. And that is, I think the short story is much neglected, particularly by writers, because they think they've got to write a novel, and therefore they don't develop their craft. And the short story requires a tremendous amount of craft to just get down to the essence. And what you learn in writing a short story, I think, enriches what you do as a novelist.
Angela.
Pretty much been explained by now. I do want to say, Linda and Janet, the Alfred Hitchcock magazine, Ellery Queen magazine, they're like gold mines. I mean, they're full of things. And the thing about a short story is, to me, it's not the same at all. It's like a different animal, as Jim said. It's a short story, you have to take every word and make it count as many ways as you can. Just the one word. You choose each word. You choose if this word already has some kind of built-in meaning. You just use that to get your point across without having the luxury of space in the novel of like blah blah blah. Blah, you know, so you create this big picture. Well, by the time you created a big picture in a book, your short story word count is gone. It's up. So every word has to count. Every thing that you write, the way you craft your sentences has to count. So it's almost like poetry expanded. In poetry, that's the most distilled use of words. And, you know, you hear, like songwriting, you know, they choose each word. It's not like they have a 1,000-word thing in a song. They have to make it meaningful. And so that's poetry, it's really songwriting. And then somebody told me, well, or actually Stuart Kaminsky told me, short stories are so much more often made into movies. And the reason is because the story is pure. And there's so much less to cut out. And they make very good movies. And it started me thinking, you know, William Goldman, who's a wonderful, very, I don't know what you call him now, the elder of screenwriting. You know, I think he did Butch Cassidy, isn't that
yes,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Sundance Kid. Anyway, he says, you know, writing structure. And that's true whether it's poetry, short story, novel, whatever, movie, theater, it's structure. Everything, it's like the bones, and then you put the words to build up the bones to make the body. And so a short story is, people take for granted the cool short story they read, but they really look at it carefully, you'll see that all the words are loaded with meaning.
I just wanted to add one quick thing. When I was learning my craft, learning to write, it never occurred to me to write a novel. I wrote short stories. And I really learned to write writing short. Now, none of the short stories. One was named Goodbye, Mrs. Rutherland. You know, very metaphorical. I mean, none of them would get published. But I was learning the craft on working on short stories, which I don't think I would have learned as well had I been working on a novel for 20 years. And it wasn't until I had quit acting and decided to write. For some reason, I didn't think of short stories. I thought of novels, and so I did write the novel. But it was the short story that taught me my craft.
Coming back to Melody, what is the key element to this?
I didn't get the first question.
It's because you're the prettiest.
What is the key element that you believe must be contained in a story? What is the key element that you believe must be contained in a story to make it successful?
You're the prettiest.
Okay.
You can pause if you
like. I don't know.
I think, well, there are many key elements in a short story. All right. But the major key element, especially if you're writing genre fiction, is character and suspense. Those are two key elements, not one. And for me, what I love is also great dialogue. I just think dialogue uses short stories so beautifully. But the key element is always goes back to character. I don't care whether you're writing an epic, whatever, or the shortest story in the world. You're going to need a wonderful character in there. I can also some other key elements are the ability to hone. I mean, I discovered when I was writing short stories, but I'm rather a ruthless editor. And I developed a very strong monitor about what to cut out. And I have no qualms about putting a big red X to an entire page of my work and just taking it out. Because I somehow instinctively know it's slowing the story down.
Rob.
Well, certainly suspense is one of them. Character is very important, but on the other hand, one of the best stories I read in Hitchcock a couple of years ago was called In Search Of. I don't remember the author's name. But essentially there was no character in there. It was sort of an implied character. The story was written in second person, meaning it was you, and we never found out who the narrator was. That was a narrator, but you turned out to be the main character, and you sort of had to imply who this character was as it went. So I guess it was a character, sort of, but boy, it was hard to figure out who that character was. And I would say that the thing that has to be there, and it's kind of an amorphous thing, is what I call the payoff. And the payoff is the thing that justifies the reader's time. And the reader's time could be justified by this really dazzling bit of physical action in the movie, or emotional payoff, or it could be a lengthy intellectual explanation of who actually done it and why. But there has to be something that makes the reader say, yeah, okay, I realize there was a reason I was reading this story. Because sometimes we get to the end and there wasn't any reason. It was worth justifying our time. So that's what I look for, more than anything.
Hey. Yeah.
Well, piggybacking on what Rob said, for me, the payoff, a short story is like a good joke. You have an important setup. I don't mean it's funny, but there's an important setup, and then a punchline, and that punchline is the payoff. It's just the twist ending. Not all crime stories have twist endings, but often the ones I enjoy the most are the stories that have a. You're reading a story. You think you know what the story is that you're reading, and then you get to that last couple of paragraphs, and didn't expect that.
Thanks.
I don't think that you can reduce a short story to a single key element, but there are a number of things that a good short story always has to have. One of them is you have to have a killer opening. That's much more important in a short story than it is in a novel. In a novel, you've paid, you know, $25 for the book, and you're willing to put up with several pages before you determine whether or not you're going to throw it across the room. Short story has to sell it to you in the first paragraph. You have to be immediately engaged in the story, and so that you are propelled on to the next paragraph or whatever without even thinking about it. It has to catch you right there. Secondly, you have to begin increasing tension right away. I like to say economy in writing, especially for short stories, is not writing something in the shortest way possible. It's writing it in the best way possible. As Angela was saying, packing as much meaning as you can into the words as you possibly can. Sometimes that means you may have to use more words than you need to get the bare semantic meaning of something across. But if that's also serving the purpose of increasing the tension or of engaging the reader, you know, there are such brilliant writers that their very prose just draws you in. It's not necessarily the action that they're talking about, but there's something there that will always draw you in. I think that's absolutely important. Finally, any story has to have an ending that satisfies the readers, as Rob was saying. It has to have a payoff. But the payoff, lots of times what people don't realize is you still have to tie up a little knot to let the reader know that this is the end of the story. And at the end of the story, the reader will feel satisfied and glad that he did not waste his time reading it. It's always about the reader. It's never about the writer. Because you are asking the reader for something that you cannot give back. You're asking him for his time. And that's something that cannot be replaced. So those things, I think, are central to storytelling, at least short storytelling.
Okay. Yeah, I would emphasize something that you would not think normally as critical in short stories, but it is. And it's the same element that's critical in thrillers, and that is pacing. I think a short story, you can't spend 5,000-10,000 words describing rooms and ruminating and interviewing 15 suspects. I mean, it has to really move. And you have to include all the elements that are in a novel in a condensed form. And the way to do that is not to drop elements. That's my opinion. I mean, you need description, but you've got to have a critical description. I think one way of getting that character in a short story that doesn't bog things down is to do it through your dialogue, because dialogue really moves story. If you do the dialogue right, you don't have to tell people about these characters. These characters will live in the writing.
Angela,
that was my question. So I think she can tell you I know the answer.
She gave me the question.
The thing is, Hemingway's book, The Old Man and the Sea, the song that goes out in the book and everything, that's what it's about. That's it. And what made that such a fantastic thing is one word, interesting. You made it interesting. So that should tell, especially this front row of very, very industrious young people here, it has to be interesting. It doesn't really matter what you write about. If you can make it interesting, God bless you. I mean, that's it. I mean, character dialogue, whatever, don't have character, don't have dialogue, doesn't matter. If you write something and you can make it interesting, you just wrote a great short story. And in that vein, I brought a little short story to read. And it's called, forgive me for this one. You don't know me, Yummy, I live somewhere else. It's called Her Diary, His Diary. Her Diary, you guys have to forgive me for reading it because I won't be able to remember it. Her Diary, tonight I thought my husband was acting weird. We had made plans to meet at a nice restaurant for dinner. I was shopping with my friends all day long, so I thought he was upset at the fact I was a bit late, but he made no comment on it. Conversation wasn't flowing, so I suggested that we go somewhere quiet so we could talk. He agreed, but he didn't say much. I asked him what was wrong. He said nothing. I asked him if it was my fault that he was upset. He said he wasn't upset. It had nothing to do with me and not to worry about it. On the way home, I told him I loved him. He smiled slightly and kept driving. I can't explain his behavior. I don't know why he didn't say I love you too. When we got home, I felt like I had lost him completely, as if he wanted nothing to do with me anymore. He just sat there quietly and watched TV. He continued to seem distant and absent. Finally, with silence all around us, I decided to go to bed. About 15 minutes later, he came to bed. To my surprise, he responded to my caress, and we made love. But I still felt that he was distracted and thoughts were somewhere else. He fell asleep. I cried. I don't know what else to do. I'm almost sure that his thoughts are with someone else. My life is a disaster. His diary. Boat wouldn't start. Couldn't figure it out, but at least I got laid. That's a short story. I mean, you can't tell me that that was not funny or interesting or, you know, didn't keep your interest.
Well, we're about to say typical male.
It didn't have a big fish in it, that's what I
said. It was not a good ending.
Okay, Melody, you're telling me.
Is there a continuing theme to your story, aside from trying to kill somebody off?
You know, I didn't really think about trying to kill somebody off. I also think that I, you know, if I hadn't started out in this genre, well, that's not true, because I love the genre. I'm reading Raymond Chandler and we're talking about that. So those are the books that I love. But when I start to write, I don't think about what the murder exactly is going to be. That just somehow happens. I think the continuing themes would be isolation in the midst of a profession that has lots of attention and fame. I would think also of a woman dealing with aging in a profession that is youth-oriented and also getting her life back with every step she takes. And also trying to find the morality in a profession that really does not deal in morality. And success is the only morality. And trying to find that fine line to walk where you can play the game, but still, you know, look at yourself in the mirror.
Well, that's a bad thing to say, but especially in my early stories, I definitely had a theme, which may be why I had trouble getting them published. But and the theme seemed to be killing old men. Like, I swear, out of my first 20 stories, 10 of them had an old man dying or nearly dying. Somebody said, "There's, you know, you got issues there, pal, somewhere." I did get a few stories published that way. My first one in Hitchcock had that happen. But eventually it got to a point where I hadn't done that in a while, and I had an idea for writing a story about an elderly, somewhat senile musician, and I thought, I don't want to kill him. I'll have him kill somebody. And a lot of people think that was my best story, so maybe that was a good turnaround. I don't know. Other than that, my other theme is, I think generally, as Donald Westlake said, I think my theme is confusion. I certainly have a lot of that in my stories, I think. So,
no.
Jane.
You know, Jane Austen wrote six novels that essentially have the same plot. You know, that you have a young woman or two young women who get into a romantic entanglement that goes to hell in a handbasket, but finally has a happy ending. So all six of those books have essentially the same plot, but they're all extraordinarily different because each one has a different theme. Right. That is, Pride and Prejudice is about Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility is about how people perceive romance, etc. And they're very different books, even though the plots are very much the same. I write crime fiction, but I think that most of the stories each have different themes, because each one of the crime illustrates some. Each crime illustrates something else. Okay. Having said that, in Hard Boiled, you cannot escape the theme of corruption and standing up against corruption. That is fundamental to Hard Boiled fiction. The historicals, though, all hang their hat on some period detail. There's no point in writing a story that takes place in 1768 if the story could also take place in 1978 and you're just putting people into 18th century drag. You know, it's got to be a reason that it takes place at the time that it takes place. That opens itself up to all kinds of themes. My most popular story is called Black Spartacus, and it's about a slave who's a block boxer. His master makes him into a boxer who is accused of killing his master. Okay, that story could only take place in the 18th century. But what, of course, it's exploring is the entire idea of slavery and ownership and corruption in that regard. None of the other Trovesco stories deal with that particular issue, although that character is a recurring character. So.
I've written short stories with a number of different characters and a number of different themes, but I would say that I tend one way or another to get back to a kind of a political theme, and which is related to justice, and also to some extent the rebellion of the individual from those that try to mold you. So I have a number of stories that refer to cults and people that try to control your mind.
Well, I have two sort of conflicting issues with theme. I think everybody has, every writer, I mean, has a theme. But it's like, you know, after so many years you write so many stories, you really have to kind of then, in hindsight, look back to find the theme. Because it's unconscious. You don't know you're writing about it. You write about justice. You write about, you know, the old lady that got killed next door and so forth. But and you could say each of those are themes, but the overall underlying theme, I think you have to kind of look back after you have written several things to discover what is your theme. It's not like you put it into what you write. It is in what you write. And then on the other part about writing themes, I think you'll find, if, for instance, in my short stories and most everything I write, I tend to not quite follow the legal justice. You know, I guess, I don't know why, but it just, you know, it's the way it works out. I do twist endings, I love them, but they always come out where the person, somebody did something wrong, but they didn't get their legal just desserts, but they got true justice as opposed to, you know, going to court. I don't know if it means about me as a person, but there we are.
I want to just jump in here. After the panel, of course, we have signing, book signing. Some of us have books, some of us don't have books. If you look in your bag, you'll find a copy of Hitchcock that has one of my stories in it. But one of the things that I want to point out is we also have a collection with everybody here except for Tim, poor Tim, that is available for sale in the book room, either hardcover or paperback. It's a limited edition of a book that we put out originally as a prize in the contest, but the paperback is $15, the hardback is $35. It's not signed yet, but they're numbered, and it's a limited edition. If you are interested in comparing the different styles of the different authors and the things that we are thematically exploring, you can get it at Mystery Mike's down in the book room. Sorry.
I'm fascinated, James. What's the title of this masterpiece?
Oh, the title of the masterpiece is A Criminal Brief Christmas. Is the name of it, because it was originally intended for a Christmas contest. But it's a Mystery Mike's downstairs. A Criminal Brief Christmas. Thank you, Ron.
By the way, none of the stories have Christmas as a theme.
Yeah, Steve is the editor.
I might mention that in a few months you can buy my collection. My Permanent Marietta stories, 9 Permanent Marietta stories that have been put out by Perfect Crime Press.
This can be a yes or no answer. Do the magazine editors suggest plots to you?
No.
No.
They sometimes suggest what we can do with our plot.
No.
No, but it's an anthology. Sometimes you are instructed to write about some broad general thing. But no, other than that. Alright, there are some short fiction writers in the audience. How do you market yourself? Instead of by getting published. You know, I mean, I don't know how to market a short story. I mean, I just, you know, I don't know how to answer that question. Like, get published, get your work out on the internet, in print, however you can. That's marketing.
And just send to every mystery magazine?
Oh, sure, of course. I thought, when you said marketing, I thought you meant publicity. Of course. I mean, and not just mystery magazines. There's all kinds of magazines out there. And I would like to make one quick comment here. I was asked to be in an angling, you know, fishing anthology. And I thought, as when I was a child, that I had flow fish and up in Montana with my father and brother. And I called my brother, and I, you know, they said, fine, I'll leave you, we want you to do this. And so I called my brother, and I said, I can't quite remember, you know, when we were fly fishing, he said, Melanie, we didn't fly fish, we bait fish. And I said, is there a difference? He said, yes. And I hung up the phone, and I thought, oh, yeah, shit. And so I got a call from T. Jefferson Parker back and saying, you know, I can't do this. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm a fiction writer. What can't I do? You know? So I wrote one hell of a story about fishing. You know, without honestly having been a major fisher, you know. And I just wanted to share that with you as to how you don't always have to know what you're doing as a writer.
Me?
Yeah.
I've already forgotten that this was about marketing, right? I got on the same wrong end, the dead end as Melody there. I was thinking about marketing the story after you already published it, which I think James actually is the expert on the panel on this subject about. But the one thing I want to tell you about marketing a story that you haven't sold yet is there are a pitifully small number of places to sell stories these days, especially genre stories. So the important thing is, once you've been rejected by the few markets that are available, you do not despair and throw the thing away. You put it in a drawer and wait for the market to reveal itself. Okay? For example, the story I was nominated for Anthony for was rejected by all the magazines that existed before a British anthology by Maxim Jakubowski presented itself. I sent the story there. He accepted it, paid me for it. I got an Anthony nomination. You don't throw anything away.
A personal anecdote. I had an idea for a story that I thought was perfect for Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. This was a story in my mind that was made for Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. I put everything into writing that story, which meant I put too much into it. So I ended up writing a story. I prepared the story to submit to Ellery Queen, and at the same time, I had another idea for a story that was in me that needed to get out, and I wrote that story, and I said to myself, I'll send that to Ellery Queen along with the one that really is meant for Ellery Queen. Well, guess which one Janet bought? So I guess my suggestion is be persistent, polish, hone your craft, and write the best that you can write without putting too much into it.
Okay, first thing is find and read and obey editor's guidelines. Every publication will have a set of expectations of writers that submit to those publications. So find those and read them. Most of them are online. Secondly, become familiar with the fiction that is published by the market that you're trying to break into. If you write, for example, a wildly supernatural mystery, you are not going to sell it to Ellery Queen, most likely. Because Ellery Queen does more detective, more traditional detective and crime fiction. On the other hand, Hitchcock may want that story. But you should be familiar with the editor's tastes and what they like, and the only way you can do that is to read the magazine and several copies of the magazine. And that's not just Queen and Hitchcock, that's any market. So you need to get a feel for what the editor wants. Secondly, write an appropriate length. Now, most magazines will have certain lengths that they will publish and certain lengths that they will not publish. In particular, if something is really long, 20,000 words or so, the odds of selling it get more remote. One of the things a magazine editor and also an anthology editor is looking at is column inches, how long the story is going to be and how it's going to fit the magazine. So one 20,000 word novelette is the equivalent of four 5,000 word short stories. So obviously the 5,000 word short story has got four times better chance of selling than the novelette does. Having said that, if the novelette is really good, it's going to sell. And what really the bottom line in any sale of any story is how good is the story. But you do have to think in word lengths and think like and have a aim at the expectations of the editor, not necessarily in your skill as a writer, but as a purveyor of a useful product that you can sell. You also mentioned there are some writers, short story writers in the audience. One of them is the very eminent short story writer, R.T. Lawton, who's sitting in the back there. So.
Yeah, I like to tell a little anecdote too. Show you never the good story never dies, and maybe not dying, but it never dies. I wrote this story because I heard about an anthology that was going to come out called Sex, Lies, and Private Eyes. I said, oh my God, this is a great, great theme. So I wrote a story called The Masseuse. I submitted it. Luckily, it was rejected. The reason why I say luckily is because the anthology never came out. So I got this story, I don't know what to do with it, so I figured I'd send it to Hustler magazine. Hustler sent me this nice letter back saying, you know, this is really a very good story, I really liked it, but there's not enough gratuitous sex in it. So I said, what am I going to do? So I submitted it to the Mystery Writers of America Death Do Us Part collection, where, you know, it's an anonymous submission. It was accepted, and I have gotten more money from that one story than virtually all my other short story writing combined, just from that one story. I got a royalty check. 3 years later, that is 2 months ago, for $250 for that one story. It's only about 4,000 words. And I had gotten several other checks before that.
Angela. Well, I think you guys have covered that, but he brought up something that was really interesting. Never sell all rights your story. Only sell one time right. And there are, when you read the contract that they send you, be careful what you sign. That some of them say foreign rights and this, right? And just sell them one-time publication, and sometimes they will say, well, you can't sell it within a year of when they publish it. That's fine, because as long as you keep the ultimate rights to your story, you can sell it again and again and again. I have one story that I, honest to God, made as much story as if I had sold the book. That one story.
Yeah.
It can happen. I know, that was recommendation to be a little bit boring. But seriously, that is something serious to be careful. I think there's a website online where it's easy to sell them your story, but when they buy it, they own it forever, no matter what they do with it. And they are feeding into, just so you know, a movie company. So if somebody makes a movie out of your story, you're just going to be able to watch it in the theater like everybody else, unless you watch what you sign on that contract.
Thank you. We're going to take questions. If anyone has a question, they can come to a microphone. Yeah. Would you like to come over here?
Okay. You mentioned that as short story writers, you will have to be readers. I wonder if you could each name your favorite or one of your favorite short stories by somebody other than yourself.
Oh.
So we go down the line again? Or?
Can I start?
I guess.
Okay, so
I have no favorite. I have a favorite of the day, but it's my favorite flavor ice cream. That changes next week, you know? So that's why I want to go first, because I really cannot name favorites. Except I love the Rump Home Stories, the Sherlock Home Stories, you know, I can't pick one. I never have been able to. So now you guys go on.
Well, I think my favorite story was the famous Chandler story, The Red Wind. That's fantastic. My second one I would have to go to a Hammond story. The I never pronounce the name. The Ray at the
Gutting of Acoustic Mouth. Gutting of Acoustic Mouth.
Right. The Gutting of Great One is a fabulous story. That's the one where you know. If you could ever write any detective fiction at all, you must read that story. Because that's where the concept, the ideology, you might even say, of the detective gets developed.
We were asked this question at BatraCon in Baltimore, and three of us picked Red Wind. So I thought that was
right.
Amusing. So I'll pick something else. One of my favorite short stories is Liar by Isaac Asimov. It's a story about a robot that can read minds. I won't tell you anything more than that because you need to read it. It's a great short story.
I can't think of a specific story offhand, but there's an author who's much better known for his novels, Jeffrey Deaver. Jeff Deaver is a fantastic short story writer, and if anyone wants to learn the craft of short story writing, pick up his book, Twisted.
I've narrowed my favorite down to three off the top of my head. I can come up with more. Shirley Jackson, but not the library, is what you think I'm going to say. The Possibility of Evil. Oh, man, it's not. I didn't want to talk to you afterwards. So. Lauren D. Esselman wrote a story a couple years ago called Square One. It is the short story novel reduced to about four pages. It is perfect. Donald Westlake, Come Back, Come Back. I read it before I even knew who Donald Westlake was, and I still can remember almost every word of it. Frederick Forsyth wrote a story about, Privilege. A story called Privilege. Brilliant. My favorite court story.
Well, mine is The Red Wind, and mainly because when I read it, I knew that I wanted to write that kind of fiction, and I wanted to write it that well. And, I mean, I think that opening paragraph, where he captures the Santa Ana winds and the woman rubbing the sharp edge of a knife and looking at the back of her husband's neck, is just, it's just brilliant writing. Also, there's a wonderful Colette short story, I can't remember the name of it now, but about a fake or faux strand pearl, which I have on. And it's a wonderful, wonderful short story, and it has a lovely, lovely twist at the end. Also, Flannery O'Connor is probably one of the great short story writers, a southern writer, a beautiful writer, and if anybody's truly interested in writing a short story, she must be read. Thanks. Any more questions? Well, but we will thank the panel.
Nope, just bring them back.
Bring them back.
Oh, hello. Back there.
Can you
like to come down?
Do you
have
any online sources? Sometimes I have trouble finding stories, but I've heard of literary mythology called out of print or, you know,
online sources for anthology.
I would look for specific authors. I know that all the Sherlock Holmes short stories are available freely online.
Not the classics, but like Florida or other.
She's asking how to find stories from contemporary authors that might not be obviously available. A lot of the Alfred Hitchcock Beverly Lee magazines are available electronically. So you know, maybe you can find the Esselman story there, for example.
Interlibrary loan.
There's a number of really good e-zines out there that publish very, very fine short stories. And I've had I've been in two anthologies, and those anthologies were drawn from these e-zine collections. And it's on hard-boiled, but they tend particularly toward the hard-boiled.
I have a question. And Clint and I were very young at the time. And I was just beginning acting, and he was just coming off of spaghetti westerns. And I came home to my husband after being on location in the Mojave Desert and having been in bed with Clint. And then the back of Clint was kissing Clint. And came home to my husband, and I said, you know, this is the nicest guy that he's never going to make it. He can't act. And, you know, so I'm a writer and he's a major actor and director, so that's how life goes. I would like to thank the panel, being extremely informative, one of the best panels so far.